This podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
This is Tech Web. Computers.
Technology. Gadgets.
And other geeky stuff.
It's on iTunes. It's awesome.
And it's from the future.
Follow us at twitter.com/techwebcast.
And
on Facebook. And check techwebcast.info for info. Tech Webcast.
Turn on. Tune in. Drop on.
Welcome to episode 273 of the Tech Webcast podcast, recorded on the 25th of January 2014. Tech Webcast is recorded every Saturday and rebroadcast on Aussie Tech Heads on Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. Please rate us on iTunes and like us at facebook.com/techwebcast. And your hosts today are Brad, Jody, Steve, Jennifer, Brent, and myself, Andrew. And our very special guest today is Alex Komarov, who is a product designer and co-founder of Just Me, Chance, and a bunch of other cool tech things. How are you doing today, Brad?
I was just about to talk, but I just remembered I had my mic muted. Andrew, how are you, mate?
Good, mate. The mute button's in the top right corner for you, Brad.
Yes, I know.
So, happy Saturday to you, buddy. Australia Day tomorrow.
Yes, indeed. Happy Australia Day to you.
Yes, yeah, it should be great. So that's our 4th of July for our American listeners.
Yes. Is that what it means? Is that right?
Yes and no. I mean, we both, it's not the same thing, but we both sort of celebrate, you know, our national identity day on, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah. Yep.
And also, happy birthday to the Mac too, Andrew. The Mac's birthday is today.
Big happy birthday to the Mac. 30 years, I believe. We'll probably run through that during the show.
Yeah,
I've just adopted a Mac in the last month or so. I figure after 30 years, it's probably okay by now.
About time, mate. You got one because you were still on Windows.
Yeah, I was. So, really enjoying it.
All right. Just really quickly, let's go through that email that I sent you from David. You did a blog post to do with Humax PBR.
Yeah, I did, Brad. We had a listener, David, shoot through an email just wanting a bit more technical information, I guess, on the PBR unit, the Humax. So I'll spend a little bit of time during the week and go through that. So thank you, David, for your email there. Yes. And we will do that. We'll go through and try and get a bit more tech detail to give you a broader, you know, understanding or option to try and make the decision to purchase a more sound one for you or not to, for that matter.
Exactly. I always people keep asking me what PVR to buy for Freeview Digital over here, and I always recommend you Humax PVR, and they're great. They run fantastic. Never had a problem with them.
Yeah, absolutely. So who else have we got on the show today, Brad?
Today we also got Jennifer on. Hello, Jennifer. Welcome back.
Hi, thank you. Happy Australia Day.
Thank you.
So do you celebrate with fireworks?
Sometimes.
Is it a big holiday where everyone kind of gets together, they barbecue, they, have fireworks and just family gets together, friends?
Yeah, they have barbecues and stuff and drink alcohol and get drunk and
play whatever. Well, I'll be thinking about you guys in the nice, warm, beautiful summer. And on your awesome Australia Day tomorrow, while I'm freezing at the 19-degree weather that we're having right now and below zero later on tonight. So
that is cold, Jenna, for you. That's cold, mate.
Yeah, it's very, very cold. Yep. Yeah. I'm sure Jody is experiencing it even worse where she is.
I'm sure she is. Jody, welcome. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Actually, I think 19, I think we were down to like 12 today, and that's Fahrenheit. So 12 it's degrees. Pretty bitter.
Wow, that's not
it's cold.
That's cold.
It is
cold, very cold.
And you know, the snow that fell on the ground, we're expecting more snow tomorrow, but all the snow, nothing is melting, and anything that looks wet is black ice. They call it black ice because you can't see it, and it's devastating for driving.
Well,
I'd rather be celebrating Australia Day.
We'd rather you be celebrating it with us as well, Jody.
I agree.
Next year. Jennifer and I will come visit next year.
For sure, definitely. Oh, so,
Jody, definitely. We're there.
Yep, I agree. So, Jody, have you actually heard of Australia Day before? Do you know what it means, or have you heard of it?
No, I haven't. That's why it's really kind of cool. And like Jennifer, you know, when we do 4th of July, which is our Independence Day, we do like that's what we do. They have the towns host fireworks. Everybody grabs everybody in their car and everybody drives to see the fireworks at night. And I don't know. I mean, I guess people get drunk. I don't know. But a lot of barbecues. But that's what we do here. That's why I'm curious. What exactly do you do? I mean,
well, we just have barbecues and stuff. And what else, Andrew? Can you explain?
Yeah, look, Australia Day is January, so for us, it's in the warm weather. So we generally, I mean, realistically, we have barbecues. A lot of the time, we go to the beach. We take a setup to the beach with us. We play cricket in the local park, wherever that is. The TV will usually be on with the cricket, you know, and you just sort of you take a few beers, you wear flip-flops, board shorts, you have a barbecue, you talk crap, and that's pretty much what it is.
Do you have shrimp on the Barbie?
Actually, we have prawns on the barbecue.
Oh, no shrimp on the Barbie.
No shrimp. Shrimp and prawns are sort of much the same thing, but we do tend to sometimes. But the big thing in Australia that recently... the lamb. Lamb has had a huge promotion, I guess, in the last 5 or 10 years to try and push on Australia Day, Aussie Day, we eat lamb. So it's kind of like the hallmark, you know, effect. You know, they've tried to push it, and it's starting to really get embraced. You know, everyone's like, oh, eat lamb on Australia Day. And I don't know what the hell that means. Why we do it like we do it. I mean, we eat lamb anyway, but for some reason on Australia Day, there's this whole artificial thing of eat lamb. And just so that, you know, what Australia Day is all about. It commemorates the founding of the colony of New South Wales in 1788. So effectively when Captain Cook and the explorers arrived to Australia in 1788, this is what we celebrate. So just over 200 years ago.
Wow, that's crazy. Hey, and also, JD, I got my iPad too, by the way. I just want to mention that to you too before I forget.
Oh, I can't wait to talk to you about that. That's so cool.
Let's talk about that after news. Brent, how are you, mate?
Hey, Brad. Hey, Andrew. Glad to be back.
Good to have
my
you on.
First appearance of 2014 with episode 273.
Welcome on. Welcome, mate.
Great to have you back, Brent. What have you been up to, buddy?
You know, at work we have these ridiculous schedules that are kind of par for the course. Now we've reached a new plateau of insanity where we try to do way too much with way too little time. So, living at the office is basically the best answer I can give for that.
Wow.
Do you have a couch or a bed set up or anything like that?
No, and I wouldn't because it would just make it more frequent to happen. I resist the urge. And once, I'll tell you what happens. Once I hear the vacuum cleaner start and the cleaning crew walk in, I'm like, all right, that's it. I gotta go. I can't stay any longer. That's enough.
Oh, that's really cool. Goodness.
All right, we got Steve on. Welcome, Steve. How are you, mate?
G'day, mate.
G'day, mate.
I'm sin for Australian Day.
Say it again.
G'day, mate. Is that pretty good? Well, not really.
That's like Australian with a Texas accent.
Yeah, that's so American.
Whenever someone says, g'day, mate, I always think of Sam Levin, the way that he does that.
Yeah, same, I agree.
It brings me straight back to Sam every time.
Wow.
That's same. I agree with that. Steve, how are you, mate? You been good?
Oh, doing good. So what are you going to do for Australian Day?
Australian Day? Probably nothing. Probably watch TV. I watch movies.
A lot of people. Just relax. Movies,
just probably just chill out and stuff. And Andrew, what do you got planned for Australian Day? Anything exciting or?
Not really. I think just sort of chill out. I think I've got a few friends maybe, but I'm going somewhere or Christie's organising to go somewhere or something. So we'll probably, there's a couple little parties. We might go down to one of them and have a few beers or something. So yeah, just keep it easy.
Good stuff, mate. Good stuff.
I have one quick question about Australia Day. So if it falls on a Monday, is that a holiday? Do you take it as a holiday or is it always every year on a Sunday?
Depending on the date when it lands on. But I know for a fact that I think the next day is a public holiday. Like a Monday is a public holiday for people.
All right, so it is a holiday. So people would get, all right, great. That's
so they can get drunk for 2 days and then go back to work. Yeah.
Is Australia an instance where it's appropriate to say things like Aussie, 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 oi, 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 or is that just for sporting events?
I think it's just for,
It's really sporting. Just for sporting events. So if anyone, it'd be a good way to get yourself a smack in the side of the head.
You know, really?
Sitting around the shrimp on the Barbie. But no, it's really good this year, actually. Barbie. I think it's going to be quite interesting because usually you have the day off, public holiday for Australia Day, but the next day you have to work. This year, because it, as Jen just said, because it falls on a Sunday over here, we've got the day off tomorrow. So I think a lot of people are going to be like, well, don't need to go to work tomorrow, might have a big one. So it shall be quite interesting to see if everyone sort of goes way over the top.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
I have one more question. You know, you like Brent brought up the Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi thing. Are there terms that you all have for Americans and that coin us? Like, those are our coin phrases for Australia. Are there American terms like that for us? Do you guys have that for us?
Andrew, do you know anything?
For me, we call a lot of Americans Yankees. I didn't realize, but a Yankee is obviously New York Yankees. You know, for some years, I just thought an American was a Yankee, you know, a Yankee. And then someone's like, no, I'm not from New York. I'm like, what does it matter? You're American, you're a Yankee. So a lot of Australians who don't have the US knowledge that I probably do through technology and so forth, see an American as a Yankee.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the old We Want You poster with, you know, the insurance, the tax and all of that, I think that's very much American. Like, I've heard people go, we want you, sort of like, I don't know. But yeah, so that's, other than that, any Americanism sort of terms, not sure. I think the old American Martin Luther King speech is, I guess that's sort of international to some extent, but that gets, you know, mm-hmm. bantered around and associated a lot with America as well. But I don't think so. I don't think there's any particular term.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure either. We got Alexander on. Welcome, Alexander.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me here.
Do you celebrate Australia Day at all, mate, or tomorrow? Or?
That will be my first Australian Day, actually.
Nice
so,
one.
I was very grateful that you guys, you know, get some explanation what it is.
Yep.
It was super interesting to hear.
Yeah, definitely. Now, you work with Keith Tier on Just Me. We're going to talk to you soon about that. It's going to be quite fun to talk about that with you. Interesting.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I do.
Yes, indeed. I can't wait to talk about that. Joe, let's jump into some news. Let's talk about them at the end of... at the end, do you think?
Okay. Well, for those of you who have Gmail, and I can't imagine anybody who isn't familiar with it, kind of an interesting surprise today because Gmail went down. Google's Gmail service went down, took Google Plus services with it, and basically everybody went on to Twitter to complain about it. So, you know, anybody who tried to access Gmail about 11:15 Pacific time, that's here in the U.S., today received a message at the top of the page that said, we're sorry, but your Gmail account is temporarily unavailable. They apologized for the inconvenience and suggest we try again in a few minutes. But it didn't take long. I think it was maybe about 10, 15 minutes, and it seemed to come back. And yet, I think there were still outages sporadically. So there's a Google app status page which confirmed that Gmail was down. I don't know. I haven't seen anywhere where it is reported why it was down, but it's interesting to note that Yahoo and Microsoft were all kind of gloating, which is kind of funny for Yahoo because their service went down last week. So, and did you guys notice that Gmail went down?
I noticed Google Plus went down this morning when I woke up on my phone and I checked and it wasn't working. So then I went on Twitter and said it was seeing people talking about it. So, yeah.
There's an update here from the U.S. in the last hour that now says from NBC News that the outage was no more than 30 minutes for most users and is being attributed to, quote, a software bug that led to an incorrect configuration.
Okay. Whatever that means.
But look, when you have that. Sorry, Jen, you go.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, okay. Well, no, I was just going to say, when something like this happens, it does kind of make you think, for those of us that do keep all of our email in Gmail and use the cloud and don't necessarily have offline Gmail or are using IMAP, then maybe we should use offline Gmail or use IMAP so we have a copy of everything in our Gmail on our system. And then also, if we truly rely upon Gmail, which I do, then if something were to happen, if they were deleted or my email, I'd be at a loss because everything is stored in my Gmail. So it really kind of makes you wonder and think these things, and maybe there should be other alternatives or some backups that you do on your own.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, my whole company runs, we run all of our email through Gmail. We just use our domain name with it, but it's so great because when we signed up for it, it was still a free product. So I think I've got like 50 or I think it might even be 100 mailboxes for free usage. So I've literally been using Gmail with my domain for that long, and it hasn't cost a cracker. But as you said, Jen, it's one thing you sort of think, oh, what happens if you were to lose all of your emails? It'd be pretty bad, like all of that history and you know, proof of dealings, I guess, with different people and stuff like that. But when something like this happens, an outage, it also makes you appreciate just how much services go into actually making it work all the time, every time, and the expectation that we have as users now that, you know, when you go somewhere, you click on it, it better be there, and it's always there, and it works. So, you know, even Google, you know, these companies are, you know, they're not perfect, and outages do happen, but it's one thing for an outage. But as you said, Jim, what happens if there was data loss? Could you imagine?
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Backup, okay, I got you. Backup. What was that, Steve?
I said, luckily, I got Yahoo. Of course, it was out last week, but I never noticed.
Yahoo, right? Okay. Interesting. Who uses Yahoo anymore?
You know what, guys?
Everyone snickers under their breath. Yahoo, you still use that?
Yeah. Steve, what's the go with Yahoo, mate? What do you use Yahoo for still?
I don't know. I've used it forever. I mean,
I suppose if it works for you, good on you.
I do got Gmail, but I just rarely use it, really.
Okay.
I had a conversation with someone yesterday who said they use Yahoo, and his whole claim was, it's going to come back. We're coming back. He's got this really cool Yahoo name, so he doesn't want to go anywhere, and he's convinced just hang around, and Yahoo's going to come back, and his cool name will come back into fame.
Wow.
The bigger they are, the harder they fall. That's my excuse.
Next story, Jody.
Okay, so, you know, it's rumor season, Mac rumor, Apple rumor, iPhone rumor season, and again, we've got some interesting things that are being kind of bantered around. One is that Apple's coming out with two new models. You know, the 5 and the 5S and the 5C are all slightly larger than the original iPhone. So they had a 4-inch screen. The original iPhone was a 3.5-inch screen. Well, it appears that they're looking at bumping it up, at least this is what the rumor is, to 1 that has a 4.5-inch display and another that has a display that's larger than 5 inches, which is approximately the screen size of the Galaxy S3 and Galaxy S4, respectively. The other part of the rumor is that the casing is going to be metal. It won't be the polyplasticky thing that the 5C had. No confirmed rumors. I don't know what a confirmed rumor is anyway, but there's been no additional, let's say, talk about the curved screen, which was one of the things that everybody was kind of talking about before. And as this phone gets bigger, it kind of makes me wonder whether you're going to have some kind of merger between the tablets and the phones. And personally, I like a smaller phone. I don't know what you guys think, but that's the most recent rumor.
Mm. Andrew, what do you think about this story?
Yeah, I think it's a good rumor. It's an interesting rumor, and if Apple does come out with a bigger screen to, you know, obviously go after that sort of Samsung Android market, I'd be all over it. I'd love to have a bigger screen. You know, the Chris Vosses of the world sort of look at the iPhone 5S as, you know, this toy thing with a toy screen. If we could have the same size as a Samsung with the user experience that I think is a premium experience that Apple offers, then I'm all for it. I'd love it. I'm really looking forward to the 6.
How much would you pay for it?
I think the 5S is too expensive, personally. Well, so I certainly wouldn't want to pay more for it. But the reality is my contract's up and I'm just going to get the version 6, whatever it is. That's what it is.
Okay. All right. Interesting. I'll have to wait and see. For me, I'll have to check it out better. Steve, what about you?
Yeah, I could see you. Actually, I've got the iPhone 4S and I could use mine a little bit bigger. The 5S looks pretty good. I could see up to a certain size, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. What about you, Brent? What's your view on this?
Kind of makes sense in a way that the 5C is going to be going away. It just never really took off, and people tended to go with the 5S, and I think there was like a 3-to-1 ratio or something like that. It was just way more popular. Gold, even the highest of the of the 5S's. So it kind of makes sense because premium materials is where Apple is in their comfort zone, and people tend to go with the high-end products that Apple makes. Yeah, they make different price points, but premium materials is where they feel most comfortable. I think one-handed operation in a post-Steve Jobs Apple is still critical. I think Tim Cook knows that how big the screen gets is going to be relative to if it's still one-handed functional. You can control everything through your thumb. That's why the screen gets longer, not wider necessarily for them. But it is time to get a little bigger. Hopefully they can pull it off okay. And looking forward to seeing what they come up with. It's interesting that we no longer have this every summer. The release schedules now for iPhones are no longer annual. You never know. It could come out in a month. I wouldn't be surprised.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. What about you, Jennifer? What's your view on this?
Well, I think that it would be a move in the right direction to go with a larger screen. There's definitely a huge marketplace for the larger screens. I mean, you just look at the product lineup that we have today, and between the larger screen smart devices and also, you know, we're moving into the phablet space as well, that people, the consumers are wanting that. So it makes sense for them to create a solution in that area. I would hope that they would still continue to have maybe just like a smaller one and then the larger one and do kind of like iPhone mini, yeah, and then the main iPhone or something, yeah, of that nature. I do like the size it is now. It feels really nice in my hand. And I do tend to gravitate towards my 5S over a larger Android because the larger Android, like a Note 3, is more challenging to hold.
Mm. All right. Yeah. What about you, Alex? What's your view on this story?
Well, I personally don't like the fact that Apple will dilute their product line with yet another variation of their product, but I also recognize that this is inevitable. They made a successful product. Everyone in the world, well, lots of people in the world are using it, and inevitably you have to make adjustments to different kinds of markets. So that's what they did with the iPod. It used to be just an iPod, right? And then it was iPod Shuffle, iPod Nano, iPod Touch, and iPod. And I think the same will happen with the iPhone. We see this happening with the iPad as well. I personally really like the smaller iPad, although I have both. So I use both.
I love the iPad Air, Alex. I got mine the other day, man. I love it. I swear by it. I love it.
Yeah, and so yeah, I guess it's just one of the, you know, if you don't trust the price of the Apple stock, this is just another proof of them being a successful company with a successful product that they need to have more targeted products.
All right, Jody, what are you? What's your view on this story?
I find it really ironic that our tablet. Apple tablet is getting smaller. So we've gone from the, you know, iPad 4 to now iPad Air, which is lighter and basically the screen isn't smaller, but the product itself is smaller. For me, a phone is still primarily a device that you use to speak, and secondarily, it's something that you take pictures with, and then it's also your computer and your, you know, a screen to watch things on.
Yeah.
I use them, you know, sometimes interchangeably, but for the most part, I like a phone that is convenient to slip in a pocket or throw in a purse or, you know, take with me. And the tablets, while it's more convenient than a computer, it's still not as portable. I can't see holding a tablet up to my ear to have a conversation. So I kind of prefer the smaller size phones, and I hope that, you know, if there's this movement towards bigger phones, that we do get a Zoolander version, you know, like a little mini thing.
Yeah.
So, but that's just me.
Okay.
I'm old school.
So what happens?
We have some more news from Apple. And again, this comes in the rumor category, and it's about Apple TV. You know, it's been a while since they've updated the Apple TV. At least it seems like it has been. You know, they push different upgrades out to the box, but there's two schools of thought in terms of what they might be doing. One school of thought is that they are going to integrate a gaming system with it. They support AirPlay already, but what it would do would be to provide multi-screen gaming experiences, like Real Racing Series, add new controllers that are supported under the Bluetooth game controllers and the MiFi. Then the other side of the equation, like, you know, the whole game thing, the other side of the equation is that it won't be developed, that the games will be an add-on, but it won't be developed as something that's kind of like a modified game box. So the last update that they've had with Apple TV, last significant one, was in March 2012. We believe it's due for a refresh. Not quite sure exactly what it's going to be. I mean, I use my Apple TV mostly to watch Netflix, and it's interesting too because that's really our next story. So I'm going to jump right into the next one. Netflix, you all heard about the verdict last week with Verizon and net neutrality, and the fact that an ISP now can throttle or otherwise impede traffic from specific sites. Apparently, Netflix is very concerned about this. And in a worst-case scenario, they're imagining that they're going to have to pay fees to the ISP to stop degrading their service or the feed of their service. And what they're telling their user base and also their stockholders is that they're ready to rally if need be. So in other words, they would get people up in arms to help support the idea of net neutrality and consequently, hopefully, keep the rates lower and also be able to receive Netflix without having it throttled or slowed down. So I'm curious if you guys have any thoughts about that one.
Andrew, would you have a view on the story?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. I'm actually almost on the other side of that argument. I think if one person is purchasing internet for their $40 or $50 a month and they do a bit of emailing and every now and then they download something or watch a YouTube video and, you know, some browsing versus another user who is using Netflix constantly all day and all night punching data through that, why should they pay the same amount for their internet when one person is obviously congesting the network and spending a lot more of the ISP's data, whereas the other guy might be paying $150 for cable and only using the internet for what they need? I think it's not cool. It's not nice. And look, Netflix, obviously, they aren't going to be able to charge $7 a month for basically just an access point because they're going to have quite a traffic bill potentially. So it's certainly going to make things a lot more complex. I don't like it, but I see the rational, point behind it. I guess it's, you know, data costs money and someone's got to pay. Right now the ISPs are paying, but as more and more people adopt things like Netflix, you know, and saturation goes from 10%, 20%, 30% and up, there's a bill that needs to be paid and someone's got to pay it.
Interesting. What about you, Brent? What's your view on this story, mate?
Well, you know, it was 2 days ago or 3 days ago they announced this, I think I kind of understand what they're dealing with. If you're Netflix customer service representative, what you're probably getting with barrage with all day long is people saying, "Hey, the service is great, but why is it buffering? Why is it sometimes not playing right? How come it's showing me this error that says I'm not connected or whatever?" And most of these times, the actual issue is probably with the ISP getting in the way, controlling the traffic, doing some throttling at least on the Netflix related. I mean, at any given night in America, almost the majority of traffic from any one allocated source is Netflix. They have like 30% of total bandwidth in the primetime hours in the U.S. It's crazy. Wow. So ISPs hate that because it's their biggest chunk they're giving away. And so 3 days ago, this was announced that they're going to show which ISPs are causing problems, get in the way, hold up a mirror and say, "Look, customers, it's not us. Your ISPs are the real problem." And now today, YouTube is going to do something similar. They announced that they're going to give a report on which ISPs do the best job at getting YouTube videos into your home. Again, they don't want to get blamed for stuttering and streaming, buffering issues. And it's great. These resources at the end of the internet are finally going to say, "No, it's not us. It's the pipe you're riding to get here. Your ISP is the problem. And here we're going to prove it with numbers." I love it.
Yeah, definitely. Do you use Netflix, Brent?
I do. I'm a big Netflix guy. Got it with DVDs when I first started way back, and it's fantastic.
I want it in Australia, damn it. Bring it to Australia.
Get the VPN.
Let's not go there, Alex. Alex, let's not say that on the podcast, mate, because we'll get in trouble saying that. Don't want to be in trouble. What about you? What's your view on that story, Alex? About Netflix.
Well, it's interesting to see how Netflix how Verizon is different from, say, T-Mobile, which did pretty much the opposite to what Verizon did, and they now have a global mobile data, unlimited global mobile data, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
So yeah, Verizon strikes me as a kind of old school in this regard, and I think eventually these kinds of people who just use the internet for email will vanish, because we are moving into the era of Internet of Things, and basically everything will be internet. So even if you don't use internet, you'll be kind of using internet, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
If you're not a geek.
Exactly.
So definitely, I think that this will bring a lot of challenges to ISPs to find a different structure to their data plans or to their pricing tiers. And it's the same as it's the same what happens to mobile carriers. Like before, they were charging for SMS, you know. Now it's kind of ridiculous, you know. People start understanding that.
Yeah.
Same will happen with ISPs, I think.
All right, good answer, Alex. Jennifer, what about you? What's your view on this story?
Well, I am on the side of Netflix. I am against the ISPs for throttling and making our viewing and our access of these services unstable. I watch Amazon Prime a lot, and I get a lot of throttling, even though I have 50 down, 5 up. So I shouldn't, but I do, and it really infuriates me. So, you know, I'm all about net neutrality. I think Netflix is outstanding for standing up like this, and I am behind them. And if they want to rally me, I say, yeah, let's do it, Netflix, and yeah. I'll be by your side.
Good answer. Steve, what about you? What do you use Netflix and
I used to use Netflix for quite a while. I changed the way I watch things now, but I don't know. It's like, of course, Netflix is one of the biggest online streamers there are, just about. So during peak hours, like someone mentioned, about 30% is Netflix. But even though what Andrew said, that you know, people that really hog the bandwidth. Which I agree with up to a point, but you got to think too, ISPs, you know, they're wanting to get as many people using the service as possible. But on the other hand, they should be upgrading their services to allow for, you know, growth. The more people they bring in, they need to widen their services, upgrade to, you know, fiber or whatever they have to do. Because I think we're getting to a point right now that we're so dependent on the internet. Some jobs you can only do through the internet. They don't even have applications you can go to fill out paper-wise. You got to go on the internet. That might be, at one point, it might be government regulated. Yeah. Of course, I don't see it anytime soon, but in the far future, perhaps.
What speed of internet do you get, Steve, on your internet connection?
I recently upgraded mine, so I'm getting about 50 down, 5 up.
Yeah, that's all right. That's good. That's good. Wish I got that on over here, but I don't. Okay, Jay, next story.
Okay. and by the way, just for the record,
go ahead,
Jen. I agree with you. And it's kind of funny because you guys are probably too young for this, but in the old days when you used to have a telephone, you used to have to pay per call, and if you went over a certain area geographically, you had to pay for something called long distance, and it was so complicated and confusing. When I got my phone initially, the same thing, my mobile, you had to pay, you know, for each call, and you had X amount of data. I switched to an unlimited plan, and I have not looked back. I have unlimited calls on my phone and unlimited data, and it is so worth it to me because I don't want to have to count my minutes, and I don't want to have to pay attention. And I'm frustrated with the ISPs because they tell you that you have unlimited. So here I've got this great unlimited plan. But if I go over a certain amount, it's throttled. And they'll send me a note that says, oh, by the way, you've reached the threshold of 2 gigs or whatever it is. And, you know, now you can continue using it, but it's going to be a lot slower. So the fact that they have sold it as unlimited, and in reality, it isn't, because you don't get the same level of service, I'm frustrated, and I agree with Jen, and I think that this whole idea of charging more for heavy usage, they should just assume everybody's a heavy user and then call it a day.
Yeah, definitely. So, what do you pay? How much do you pay for your phone phone plan, Jody?
Well, I've got mine, and I've got Jackie's phone on my plan, and it's unlimited. I think all in, it's probably about $200-$225 a month.
Wow.
But it's the iPhone, so it includes the data, it includes everything, okay. You know?
That's good. That's cheap then, yeah. That's good.
You know, and unlimited calls, like I can call during, you know, prime time, and I don't have to worry if I've gone over minutes or, you know, I could keep it on all the time.
So do you ever call overseas?
I don't think it includes overseas.
Okay.
Like if you had a Google number, I could probably call that.
Okay.
I don't think that would incur anything, but a legitimate call to like a what would you call it, like a landline?
Yeah.
I'm not sure how that works. I don't usually do that.
Have you ever called to Australia before?
Well, I've talked to you, but I don't know. I mean, we usually talk over the internet, right?
Okay, yeah. I'm just curious to know if you did or not.
Well, I'll have to start then. No, really, I haven't. I know, right? I haven't on this phone.
Okay.
But
cool.
All right, I'm gonna jump back into the news. Let's move quickly.
Yep.
Really cool kind of development, kind of Android helping to market iOS, which is kind of interesting. Apparently, SwiftKey Note could bring a popular Android keyboard to the iOS platform. It's a cool interface, and it allows you to type on your phone faster. And it's something that integrates SwiftKey's phrase prediction keyboard into your iPhone. Apparently, this is a note-taking app. I mean, do you guys use this? I'm not familiar with SwiftKey, so
yeah, I've used it on my S4 ages ago. I wasn't a fan of it. Jennifer, have you used it?
I have used it for years, SwiftKey. I've always been in their beta program, and I love SwiftKey Flow. Now, SwiftKey Note, this sounds like a brand new one, and that's their note-taking app. I have not tried that. I didn't even know they were getting into this space, so I'm not even certain if that part is out for Android at this point with SwiftKey Note. But SwiftKey Flow, the keyboard itself, is outstanding, and it's one of my favorites.
Cool. All right.
Cool.
Yep, cool. Next story.
Well, I'm gonna move along. Yep. TiVo, you know, has been one of those devices where you can record a program. You can watch one and record something else, or set it to record something when you're not around. Well, they're refuting rumors that says that hardware is a core business of theirs, and they're looking at cloud software as having huge potential. There was a Wired report that claimed that recent layoffs meant that the company was exiting the hardware business, but that's not right to say that they're out of the hardware business. Apparently, they're just as fired up as consumers about Romeo, and they expect to deliver on that for years to come. So it's one of their core businesses and a shining jewel. And that's pretty much the story about TiVo. Moving along with iWork, for those who had purchased iWork previously and or people who may have purchased a brand new Mac, you got a free version of iWork for iCloud. When it was released, it wasn't as robust as previous versions, so consumers were somewhat disappointed. Evidently today, there's been a new release. Some new features were added, so it's a move in the right direction. It's still not quite as robust as some of the older versions were, but it's still pretty cool. They've added some new features, including password protection, password sharing, some different landscape viewing, ability to edit spreadsheets. So pretty cool stuff. If you haven't looked at it today, you might want to go in and update it. 30 years of Macintosh. Today, we're celebrating the 30th anniversary of the unveiling of the original Macintosh. Macworld published a lengthy interview with three Apple executives to discuss where the Mac's been and where it's going. So if you're interested in learning more about where Mac's going, that was an interesting article to take a look at. And last but not least, Apple is planning a fix for iOS 7 home screen crashes. I'll tell you what, that has been like my biggest frustration over the past couple of weeks with all this crashing. Since iOS 7 was released in September, a lot of people have had frequent home screen and app crashes, and they've had to softly reboot the system. I mean, I reboot it probably every other day. According to an Apple representative, a fix for that issue is in the works with a software update to be released soon. Random iOS 7 reboots have been occurring for users since September. And I don't know if you guys have noticed this. I actually published the other day on my, believe it or not, Facebook stream that it's kludgy. I mean, I don't know what the heck's going on, but it seems like in the middle of an operation, suddenly it just goes blank.
Wow.
So, you know, apparently it's happening to other people as well. Some people blamed it on the service provider. Some people blamed it on the iOS 7. So,
I see it curious. Too, Jody.
What's that?
I see it too. I see it too. I get the random reboots as well.
It's
I get the same thing. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
How about on your iPad, Jody?
You know, I just got the iPad Air, and so far, I've attributed the reboots on that to the fact that I took my old iPad and I updated, like basically I copied that onto my, you know, all the programs and everything onto the new iPad. So that I still have that period where you have to like reset your passwords or maybe things have to be reloaded. But I'm hoping that that's all that is.
Mm.
I haven't had it long enough to really say that it's buggy or not buggy.
Yeah, well, my phone's been fine. Andrew, have you had that problem with your phone restarting and stuff? Or
no, I haven't, to be honest. I've iOS 7 for me has been fine. The first version, I think 101 or whatever, but I think I'm on 03 or 04. I'm one behind at the moment. The first version was really buggy, but haven't had any issues at all with this current one.
You should have seen Andrew's phone a while back in the App Store in updates. He had so many updates, not funny.
He never like 40 or 50 updates.
Your phone.
Yeah, he never updates, yeah.
I don't. I should put on auto, but yeah, I'm just really bad with updating.
And that's when I pressed update. Brent, what about you? When have you had that problem?
The auto updates is one of the best features in iOS 7. Absolutely. You want to turn that thing on. It's so nice to wake up in the morning, flick on the screen and see here's what updated while you were sleeping. Yep. I'm like, thank you. No, I've never had this kind of problem, especially one where it reboots. I mean, it's possible, I guess, if I'm walking around, it's in my pocket during the day, I wouldn't notice that it happened. But I had a system crash back to my home screen just yesterday. I haven't had one like that in a long time while the keyboard was up. But a full reboot just randomly, that's something I haven't experienced.
Yeah, that's when I had your phone, Andrew, by the way. That's when I did the updates. Alex, what about you? What's your view on this? Alex, you there? You there?
No, I might have slipped away for a moment.
God, sake. Anyway,
it sounds like the dog was like eating the microphone.
That's what I thought too. Anyway, let's go to the iPad. So, Jody, you got an iPad Air?
Yeah.
What do you use yours for?
What's that?
What do you use your iPad for?
Oh my, watching Netflix.
Really?
I want your beans,
that's
bro.
That's a dumb question. Of course you do.
Yeah, I mean, email. I mean, basically. I like watching TV on it, you know, at night. I use Zeit on it. I post on Google Plus. I do a lot of stuff on it. How about you? How are you using yours?
I'm loving the iPad Air. I was going to get the iPad Mini, but I went to the iPad Air because it's more lighter and it's great. I watch TV and then on it and Twitter.
I know, right? It's like a personal little TV.
It is. It is indeed. It is. It's great for TV.
Isn't it cool that the Mac's gone into 30 years today or this week? I mean, when you think about like iPad Air, the stuff that we just talk about, we take this stuff for granted, right? It's just crazy. If you think only 10, 15 years ago when I was a kid leaving school, the idea of this stuff is Star Trek. And I mean, Mac 30 years, I don't think we give Apple, as much as we put Apple down and they're probably a little bit behind at the moment with Android and things, I don't think we give Apple near enough credit for the innovation that they've given us as a company. You know, the iPad, the iPhone, at the end of the day, whether we like it or not, the Android, you know, those phones all follow the iPhone, the way that actual phone works. There's no buttons. Now, we were using Nokia flip phones
before
this, so everything followed that, and they made it better. Sure, now it's up to Apple to make it better again, but the innovation that's come out of that company and Jonathan Ivey's head is just phenomenal.
But why would you put Apple down? What have they done? They haven't done nothing.
Oh, I'm just saying a lot of people say, you know, oh, Apple are way behind, you know, Android's killing it, they're doing this, they're doing that. Mm. But at the end of the day, without Apple, there is no Android.
Exactly.
They created that, yeah. And Android said, I see what you did there, and I'm going to add this. And that's okay. That's great. You know, that's business and the world, you know, providing more and going further. But when I think back to 2003, I was playing around, or 2002 actually, with Qubit, Q-U-B-I-T, web tablets that were running Windows CE.
Oh, wow.
And if you Google that, you can see the Windows CE, which was effectively a really broken version of Windows that ran on a tablet. And it was just the most it was convoluted. It was just an absolute pile of rubbish. You reckon iOS 7 has bugs in it. This thing, if it started, you were lucky. That was 2002. That was a web tablet. All Apple have done is said, you know what, that's too clunky, that's too hard, and they've given us something that works, that looks nice, and that has an intuitive usability, which is something that Alex Komarov on the show, that he is really, really good with as well. I just don't think we give Apple near enough credit for what they've helped to build.
I agree with 100%, Andrew. They make great products. The iPad Air, man, that's just fantastic. What do you think of the iPad Air, by the way, Andrew?
I haven't even seen one. I've played with one in JB Hi-Fi. I think it's good. I think it's great. I think it's just a good product that's a slight evolution on the one before it.
Yeah,
but after will do the same until we end up with a small piece of glass that's see-through that you click a button on.
Exactly. And go to Big W, by the way, and they're at $568.
Okay.
They're cheap as, mate. Don't go to JB Hi-Fi, go to Big W. Alex, are you there, mate?
Yes, sorry guys, something happened to my computer and I couldn't unmute myself.
Okay, that's all right, mate. So what do you use? You have an iPhone and stuff? What do you think about the iPhone story and stuff?
Oh, I have all of them. I have every model that has ever done. The one I didn't get yet is iPad Air, actually.
I'll get the iPad
Air. I went for iPad Mini instead.
Yeah, I reckon go for the iPad Air, mate.
Yeah, I should have.
Big screen, mate. Just go to Big W and get one of the cheap as there, mate.
I have a third one, though.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, once you get the iPad Air, you'll notice a big difference. So that's good. So, Jennifer, you don't have an iPad Air, do you?
I do not have an iPad Air, but I did have one for about a month, and that was a demo unit from work. Okay. Loved it, especially using that against my iPad 3, and I found that I was using it a lot more. I don't think just the fact that it was new. It's really because it's only a pound. It's easier to hold. It's the bevel on the outside.
Yeah, it's really
the screen.
Nice. I love it.
Yeah, it's really nice,
yeah,
you know, and it's a gorgeous looking machine too, right? It's just quite handsome.
So would you be getting another one, Jennifer, or?
I think I'll wait until the next gen comes out. I think I can wait.
Okay.
So,
all right, good stuff. All right, Andrew, who do we have on today as a guest? Alex Zenz on today.
Alex Komarov, who is responsible for products like Just Me and most recently Chance, which is a really cool, I guess, text sort of, I don't want to use the term chat roulette, but you can text chat with people and meet new people all over the world, which I've done using it. And Alex has a real background around product development, but also doing it in a way that he creates intuitive user experiences, which I think is more important than creating apps and product development and all of those sorts of things, because people latch on to experience. So welcome to the show, Alex. It's really fantastic to have you on.
Yeah, welcome, Alex.
Yeah, thanks again for having me, guys.
No problem. Tell us about what you do.
I'm originally from Russia. I'm a mobile guy. I started doing mobile design in 2004 when it wasn't really cool. I did WAP, WAP sites and the SMS and IVR services. I'm actually, I always wanted to become a physicist, so I got my degree in physics, but then I discovered design as a discipline and got absolutely fascinated by it and switched to design, and that happened 10 years ago, so I've been doing it for 10 years. I spent 5 years of my life in the States, living in Philadelphia, got some agency work experience there. And when Steve Jobs announced the first iPhone, it was kind of a profound event in my life. And I wanted to go back and do mobile, but with this different notion, you know, the mobile has changed because it was redefined by Apple. And no one would let me do that at the places that I was working in. So I quit and I started my own company called Komarov Mobile. And this is a UX, UI, mobile focused studio. And recently, about 2.5 years ago, I also joined Just Me, which is a Silicon Valley startup. It's pretty high profile. You can just look up at TechCrunch or something. There's lots and lots of coverage there. And the most recent event is we discontinued the original app, and we are now building a series of separate apps that replicate the features of original Just Me, the first of which is Chance, as Andrew mentioned. Soon the others will follow.
Nice one. So how did you come across Keith Tia?
Keith actually became the client of our UX UI shop, and then I fell in love with the idea of Just Me, mm-hmm. and that was providing new kind of social network for people. And in a way, social networks are redundant because your phone already has contacts on it, and the phones are already connected, right? So why have another layer of redundancy and introduce kind of a social graph on the top of a social graph that you already have on your phone, which is your address book. And so we tried to do the social network, for the lack of a better term, that would sit on the top of your address book and that would allow you to be you, and sharing, supporting three different mindsets. One is private, where you capture your life and just saving it for yourself, sort of like a private journal. Or like Evernote. Second one is shared. It's like email where you targeted messages where you select recipients and then you can specifically share something with them. And then public is similar to Twitter, you know, where you can broadcast something for the entire world to see. And so all in one place, you control everything and it sits on the top of your address book. So it was really interesting project.
All right, Jennifer, any questions for Alex?
Yes, Alex, I am a fan of the Chance app and Just Me as well. And I was looking at your website, though, and it looks like you really know what you're doing with design and app development. So are you currently for hire, or are you contracted out at the moment?
As a matter of fact, we are the team of 7 people. So we have 2 members of our team in Melbourne, including me. My co-founder, Nikita, is located in Latvia, which is Eastern Europe, in Riga. And the rest of my team is all over Russia. So, we definitely are for hire. We are able to take some projects. So thanks for asking this great question.
Yeah, and is it both iOS and Android then?
Yeah, we have 2 specialties in kind of in our genes, because we have 2 co-founders, me and Nikita, and I'm more of an iOS guy, and he is an Android guy. So between me and him, we get this covered.
Nice, that's a perfect partnership.
Yeah.
All right, Jody, any questions?
Yeah, I'm just curious, you've seen apps, you've seen some that have done well, and you've seen others that perhaps didn't catch on. In your opinion, what makes a good app?
Well, I not only have seen the apps that didn't work, but I've built the apps that didn't work. So I know this firsthand, and most of them don't work. It's like a hidden business, so you have to understand that when you get in. It's like writing a song, you know. Can you write a song that will be successful? And what does success mean for a song? The good song cannot become a hit sometimes, and the bad song can. So it's kind of very dicey. So to answer your question, what makes a good app? And I will generalize this, and I'll answer the question, what would make a good product? And so I think the good product is it should support the existing behaviors that people demonstrate. So something that people already do needs to be enhanced by technology. So you basically you observe the world around you. You find something that people do. Then you use your knowledge and understanding of technology to reduce number of steps and to reduce friction, basically. If you start with technology, it's really important to find that niche, find that something that people are already doing, because otherwise, no one would use it because people don't really like to change. Same like iPod, for example. People were listening to the music, and iPod reduced a lot of friction. And so are tons of other apps, like Uber, for example. People taking taxi, now they can do it with one button, and on and on.
Yeah, it's interesting. So when somebody approaches you with a concept, do you counsel them in terms of how to approach it, and do you develop a persona, who the audience would be? What's the process?
Let me answer it in two. I'll give you two answers because that I think there was two questions in one. One is do I counsel people when they approach me with the project, and another do I use personas or what kind of methodology do we use? So when people come to me. I have a little bit of knowledge about product design. I'm not like the perfectest guy ever, but I've made some mistakes, and I think in this industry, what really counts is how many mistakes you made. So because when you succeed, it's really hard to understand why you succeeded. If you succeeded, you pretty much learn nothing from your success. But when you fail, you know exactly that this doesn't work, so you probably shouldn't do it again. Sometimes that can also not be true because there's tons of other factors, and we should not always judge the quality of the decision by its outcome. But nevertheless, it's very good experience, when you fail a lot of times, and I did. I mean, I succeeded sometimes too. So one of the apps that I made was used by Steve Jobs, but I was more failing than succeeding, of course. And when you see that, people come to you and they have the idea, and sometimes you just try to talk them out of it, talk them out of spending all this money for doing this experiment. And basically everyone, when they come up with the product idea, this is a guess, right? We should accept that everything is a guess in this world. And what I'm trying to do with when I work with them is to help them find the way that is the most simplest way to prove or disprove this hypothesis, and have maybe a prototype or something, some very simple experiment that will not take a lot of money and a lot of time to actually figure out whether this idea is worth pursuing. So that was the first part of the question. The second one, do I use personas? Well, yes, we do. We do use the user-centered design methodology that include personas. For those who don't know what persona is, it's basically an imaginary person that you design for. When you do a design project, you research your audience, and you research their goals and motivations and what they do and the tasks that they accomplish, and then you kind of summarize this all into an imaginary persona, because for humans it's easy to imagine people because our brain is built to understand people. So it's really easy to capture lots and lots of different details if you imagine if you kind of imagine the person around these details. So yes, we do use them, but for global products like Just Me or like Chance or like Google Search, for example, or Facebook, if you think about it, it's really hard to come up with a set of personas, actually, because effectively, if you use certain people who you imagine what you're designing for them, you will inadvertently kind of miss out on everyone else who doesn't fit. And that's something that a niche product can afford, And I think that's a good strategy for a niche product because it needs to recognize the users that they have, their targeted audience. But more and more products that we see now are more like tools and less like experiences. It's basically everyone finds their own use for this product. It's like Google Search or Twitter and lots of others. And for that, it's actually really tricky to use personas. So we actually moved on one step above personas when we use activities or motivations. So it's basically we don't really care about how old this person is or how many kids they have or what do they eat for breakfast. What we care about, why did they come here? Why? What is their motivation? What they are trying to accomplish? And then we try to provide them with a set of tools to accomplish that.
All right, good answer, Alexander. Brent, any questions?
Yeah, I got one quick one for you. It's something you said earlier was about your physics background and how that became a path that led you over to mobile UX. My question is, given the physics background and given how complex your designs seem to be from a UX perspective, did you introduce a lot of physics know-how into things like how objects move on a screen with momentum and mass and velocity? Is there any connection between the physics background and the UI experience design?
Yes, lots and lots of connections. I think it's you know, understanding the equations, it sometimes it helps actually. So we have a product that's called Timing, which is for understanding when your colleagues are. So it's like a world clock for people. We try to reimagine what the world clock would be if they were designed around people instead of places. And just as an example, so we had to distribute people on the map so they will not overlap with each other. I was helping our developers with finding the right algorithm to do that because it was like imagining that these things are atoms and they have forces that prevent them from touching each other, you know. And then we translate this into the algorithm of distributing these pinpoints on the map. But, you know, so you use some, like, direct physics knowledge. Sometimes it becomes helpful, like understanding some of the equations or how things move. But it's mostly not that. It's mostly this just the approach, the logical approach of experimentation. That's what really helps, and that's what I use constantly. If you guys heard about the movement that is called Lean Startup and Lean UX, I'm sure you guys know about it. Yeah. So it's all about failing quickly and about creating a minimum viable product to test your hypothesis. So it's a very physical way of thinking, if you think about it. It's exactly what physicists would do. They would come up with a hypothesis, and then they would come up with an experiment to disprove themselves. And if they can't, then they try to build upon it. And so that's the approach that I'm using as well. It actually gets deeper. So there's a body of work of how to solve different physical problems, and I sometimes use this methodology for solving design problems as well. So that's my secret weapon, actually.
Right. Good stuff,
Alex.
One
thing you said before, Alex, which I thought was really interesting, is really looking back at a simple view of a complex platform, I guess, is, you know, with the iPod, everybody listens to music. We love to listen to music. So instead of creating something brand new and exciting and wonderful, why don't we create an easier way to listen to music? And then it sort of got me thinking, everything, every product that's coming out that we use, that we do, you know, Apple TV, all these sorts of things, that's an easier way to watch, you know, television or network and all of this. So it's really interesting what you were saying. Let's not try and, you know, show people something new to do, but let's just try and make a better experience for what they're already doing. And then maybe once they've actually adopted that, we can add some tweaks and add some things to that. I think that's, you know, quite an interesting, I guess, product model. And just one thing to touch on, you said earlier that Steve Jobs used one of the products. Do you want to explain a little bit and talk about what product that was and how he used it?
So this was one of our cheesy experiments. We like to do experiments when we have some spare time. So when Steve Jobs announced the iPad 1, which was, I think, in 2009, if I'm not mistaken, they made available the SDK for the developers to build their own apps for the iPad. And I instantly knew that I wanted to do something with it. So we brainstormed some ideas, and we decided to make an accordion app, which basically is a gigantic accordion that takes over your iPad screen, and you can play with one hand or you can play with the both hands.
So basically a piano.
It's like a piano, but it's an accordion. It's as much as a piano as an accordion is a piano. So. but actually, it's a good point because one of the ideas, the way we moved to this idea was we wanted it to be multi-touch. We wanted to come up with a product that would support multi-touch to really take advantage of it, because that's one of the things that we thought would be really cool about the new iPad. And also, you guys should remember that there were no iPads available back then because they were just announced, so we couldn't have one. We developed everything in the simulator. And the second thing that we wanted to do is that two people can interact with it because it had a big screen. So we thought, hey, it would be really cool to come up with a product that two people can use at the same time and that would support and kind of build upon the multi-touch concept. And we came up with this idea of double-sided piano so people can play together with the piano. And then it kind of, cool. Clicked and we decided to do an accordion instead. So it was kind of, we had a lot of laughs when we were doing it. It took us about a month or so, or a month and a half. We've spent lots of time afterwards, after we launched, to polish it. So it's really polished now. We actually released a new update about a few months ago, which makes it even better.
Cool.
And we were really surprised when Steve Jobs used it on the iPad launch event, when they actually launched the iPad.
Very cool, very cool. Like, Steve, any questions real quick, because we need to wrap up okay. Very soon.
Yeah, I got a quick question. You mentioned on the Just.me app that you're splitting it up, and what kind of prompted you to do this? The app just got too big or too complicated, so you just want to simplify it by just branching it off into separate applications? Or
That goes back to my answer about usage of physics in our process. It basically allows us to experiment faster. So we find that there are certain behaviors that people demonstrated when they used Just Me. They didn't use all the parts of Just Me the way we designed or with the way we thought they would be using, but they used some of the parts that, and the usage was pretty interesting. So we got some very interesting insights. And we decided to discontinue the original app and to try to break this out, try to break these behaviors out in the separate apps and make them more targeted, because Just Me was very integrated. It was basically, if it worked, it could have replaced maybe five or six icons on your iPhone screen. And everyone is kind of living in this app ecosystem, so Just Me made a lot of sense as a part of the OS, not as a part of the iPhone or Android ecosystem of apps. And apps are much more, much more targeted, much more simple to use. And because we couldn't get on the operating system level, we decided to just embrace this app methodology kind of and do very simple apps instead.
All right, good answer, Alex. What's next for Just Me? Kifty is going to be on next week, so we may have some news for him next week.
We're actually improving chants a lot. Someone mentioned Chat Relay, and Chat Relay is, I think, there's an array of different behaviors that people demonstrate when they act anonymously in public. And some of them are bad, and some of them are good. And there is more good than, in it than bad. And Chatroulette, I think the way the reason because it was viral is because people were demonstrating a lot of bad things there. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that's all people want to do when they introduce a tool like Chance or Chatroulette to them. So we did a lot of thinking, and we have some very interesting concepts now that will help create the app that will be clean and that will actually help you to find strangers that will be interesting, because, you know, even your best friends were strangers to you at some point.
So. I met Andrew on Highlight, so yeah. Quite interesting. So yeah, okay, Alex.
It's interesting. I had the chance to sit down with Alex about 2 weeks ago, actually, and run through a whole heap of app things and go through stuff. And yeah, I know he's sitting here now, but he is one clever character. There's a lot of things that this guy knows over the years that he's been in this industry. So if anyone is out there looking for someone in product or usability design, it's quite interesting to. I mean, it's really great to have somebody in Melbourne who has got such international contacts. And, you know, I mean, this guy developed a product that Steve Jobs used at the iPad launch. What else do you need to say?
Exactly. What else do you need to say? I actually met Alex. How did I meet you? On Facebook, right?
Yeah, I think Keith introduced us.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, Keith too. Yeah, he's going to be on next week, by the way. Okay, Alex, so where can they get a hold of you and if they want to get an app made, mate?
You go to our website, which is komarov.mobi, okay. Of Mobi, and all the contact information is there.
Good stuff, good stuff. All right, and Twitter, what's your Twitter name?
It's A. Komarov.
Okay, all right. And what's your favorite iPhone app at the moment?
My favorite iPhone app? Clash of Clans, I guess.
What's it called?
Clash of Clans.
Never heard of it.
Really?
No. Is it a game or something, or what is it?
It's a top grossing game, yeah. It's a ridiculously successful game.
You know it, Steve, do you?
Yeah, I've heard of it, yeah. Oh, okay. A few times. I haven't played it, but.
All right. What's your final view of this show, Steve? And we're going to get hold of you and that sort of good stuff. And yeah.
Oh, very interesting. Always enjoy developers seeing their point of view. Of course, you can find me on. Twitter as Chatterbox_live, and of course the live TechWeb cast version on justin.tv/LinuxCoolDude.
Okay, I mentioned your show again, Steve, because you don't give it much of a plug each week. Tell us about your show for a minute.
Oh yeah, we just of course we do my show just before we go into the TechWeb cast. Actually app reviews as well. We did one earlier, and just a wide range of things, some local events here. As well, because I like to get out of the studio and film different things.
Okay, good stuff. And you love Mac? You've been using Mac for a long time?
Quite a while. Probably since I started broadcasting. Of course, I was a big Linux user for a very long time, but it didn't make a good platform for broadcasting, so I switched to Mac.
Nice one. Good on you, mate. Mac's the way to go. You can get me on Twitter at Brad Oz and Tech Webcast. Andrew, what's your final view of the show? And
yeah, really, really great show. Great to have you on, Alex. And yeah, you can grab me at Cunning Drew on Twitter and on Facebook, or zafo.com/@Andrew.
Good stuff, mate. You want to... Anyone mentioning before you go?
No. Just everyone have a great, happy Australia Day tomorrow on this side of the pond. And if you're over there, think of us with our shrimp on the barbie, mate.
Okay, that's a great saying, Andrew. Jennifer, what's your final view on the show? Mention your projects and stuff.
Okay, great. Well, for my Twitter, let me just say about the show. The show is outstanding, of course. And Alex, it has been great meeting you and talking with you. And you're a very bright individual. So I'm looking forward to seeing more that comes from you. And I'm about to get your accordion app. I have it up in the App Store right now. So I'll post the link in the
chat. Make sure to get the right one, because there's a lot of clones now.
Can you send us the link, Alexander?
I'm putting the link. I just put the link in the Skype chat. So if you would check that and tell me if that's the right one, and then I'll know.
That's it.
That's it? Right. Awesome. Right. Awesome.
I'm getting it.
And as for me, my Twitter account is Jay Ruggiero, and my website is jenniferruggiero.com. And as far as my projects, I am working with GetNerdyWithIt.com, which is a weekly podcast about nerdy topics, as well as TechAnarchy.com, another tech show. Nice. So, yeah.
good podcast, Jenna, by the way. You've had some good guests on that show so far.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, it's been, we've had some excellent guests so far. And then last night we just added an episode with Chris Gray from Total Nerd Takeover. And Brent was on that with me as well. So thank you, Brent. And yeah, we've had some outstanding. And speaking about Keith Tier, he's been on also. And yep. You've been on, and Jody has been on, yes. And Andrew's been on, and Steve has been on, and Brent's been on. So everyone's been on. So.
Who's your next guest, Jennifer, for the show?
What's that?
Who's on next week for your show? Who's on next week?
We are probably going to be speaking with Dr. Michael Kabay. He is a professor at Norwich University, and his passion and his specialty is technology, and he's written a few books. And so we're looking at getting him on Wednesday. Sweet. And crossing my fingers that goes through.
Good stuff. Yeah, good stuff. Okay, Jody, what's your final view of the show, and plug your things that you work on and stuff?
Sure, absolutely. As always, great conversation. Enjoy everybody's thoughts and input. Alex, awesome to meet you. Excited to follow you now, and you know, watch for what you're doing in the mobile environment. As far as you know, what I'm up to, my life has gone to the dogs. I'm doing a lot of stuff. I have a couple of Belgian Malinois, and I've been working with training them. And in a couple of weeks, my puppy is going to be in her first dog show. So everybody, I know, say a prayer, cross your fingers, cross your eyes, your legs, whatever. And other than that, you know, love being here on a Tech Webcast. I also am on Google Plus Week from time to time, the Chris Voss Show, and maybe eventually back to A2SM.
Yes.
So hopefully that gets – I know. I mean, I keep saying it, and then another week goes by, right? In terms of where to find me, I know, right? You can find me on Twitter as Sunswept, and you can find me pretty much everywhere else as either Jody Raines, that's JodyRaines, or WebMarcom at WebMarcom.net.
Good stuff, Jody. Also, Google Plus Week, that's a good show, by the way, too. Each week I watch it after this one.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and you know, I think everybody kind of waits for Alan Furstenberg to go ballistic. Yeah. You know, that's like the highlight.
It is indeed. Brent, did I speak to you yet?
Yeah, great show. Alex, thank you so much for taking us through what it's like working in your firm, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the future with, you know, new releases and mobile apps from you and your team. As far as contact information for me, if you want a disappointingly sparse stream on Google Plus, I'd strongly recommend google.com/+BrentWaitKnight.
Are you not on Twitter, mate?
I am, but again, you're not going to find anything at Brent Waitknight, but I've posted, I think, nothing.
Do you have a website or anything like that, or what?
No, not really.
Nothing at all. Wow. Maybe we should get you on Twitter, mate, more, maybe.
Maybe.
And Andrew, too. Andrew needs me on Twitter more. He's very...
I've been on more since last week, Brad.
Have you?
I have. I've been talking to you on there during the week.
Oh, yeah. Well, a couple of times, maybe. Yeah. That's good. That's good to see you on there more. Okay, is that it? Jody, anything else you want to mention?
No, just make it a good week. And I guess Steve lost the game?
Yes, he did. Steve, you want to leave us with your Australian accent before we go?
G'day, mate.
That's fantastic.
Hi, Glenn from Aussie Tech Heads. Join Will, Eric and myself as we bring you the latest, most up-to-date, important tech news that affects you from Australia and the world. A weekly podcast available each Friday through iTunes. Watch the live stream recording of the show at live.thesecrethub.com each Thursday night, 7:30 p.m. or GMT plus 10. Call in live via Skype or chat in our lounge. However you get us, just make sure you do. Listen or visit our website for more information, www.aussietechhead.com.au. Aussie Tech Heads, Australia's longest running Tech News Podcast.
Well, that's it for Tech Webcast this week. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed having your mind exposed. expanded. Tune in next week for more tech talk with Brad, Jason, and whatever crazy guests they've managed to rope in. Don't forget to get the Tech Webcast app from iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Tech Webcast, and of course, check us out on Facebook too. Until next time, may the tech be with you. Peace!